Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this meeting of Stafford Borough Council Planning Committee. My name is Gareth Jones and I'll be chairing the meeting this evening. A few points before we start. If you have a mobile phone, can you please put it on silent mode? And can I ask people who are in the public gallery, not round the tables, to refrain from any comments during the course of the proceedings? There's no fire alarm planned for this evening, but in the event of an emergency, please leave the building by the nearest exit and staff will show you how to get out. On my right, I have officers from the planning department, and on my left, officers from the legal department. Officers from the planning department will present each application separately as it appears on the agenda. Members of the public who have indicated a wish to speak will be given 3 minutes at the table provided, and I'll indicate when there is a minute left in order that they can sum up. Ward members are entitled to speak for 5 minutes. This meeting is being recorded and the recording will be published on the council's website. Applications that we can consider can only be dealt with in accordance with the National Planning Policy Framework and the new local plan and any other relevant planning matters. Members of the committee are reminded that they do not enjoy any immunity as that enjoyed by colleagues in Parliament, etc. I now go to the agenda, the minutes of previous meetings.
None for submission tonight, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Apologies.
All present, Mr. Chairman.
Amazing. Declaration of of members' interest. Any lobbying?
Councillor Hobbs.
Yeah, I'd like to declare an interest for the first.
For the first one?
Yeah.
A personal interest, if no one of them don't live here.
Okay. Did you put your hand up, Councillor Trowbridge? Yes.
I did, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Application 223597/FUL. I used to drink in this establishment and I do know a few people who own the building, but I have no pecuniary interest at all.
Thank you. Nobody else? Delegated applications?
As detailed on the website, Mr. Chairman.
Right, we can go now to agenda item number 5, which is planning applications. And we start with 21/3536/9/HOU. And can you start this, John, please? Oh, yeah. Oh, you, yes, you.
Thank you, Chairman. This application was published on the agenda for Planning Committee on the 27th of July this year, but due to the Conservation Officer considering Gorsley Hill Farm to be a non-designated heritage asset, a heritage statement had been requested from the applicant prior to the committee meeting. As a result, at that meeting, I recommended that the application be deferred without consideration, as the forthcoming revised heritage statement would require further consultation. The committee were informed that they would receive an updated report once this had been received and consulted on, which is the report that you have tonight. So on your agenda, you'll see there is the, first of all, there's the current report, and then behind that is the one that was published for the July meeting. The application property is the red edge that you can see on the screen, and we'll go through some more photographs in a moment. The application is for the demolition of a rear 1.5-storey wing and its replacement with a 2-storey rear extension and a number of single-storey extensions, which are described in more detail on page 5 of your agenda. Together with external alterations, which include rearrangement of the roof dormers to the front elevation, and rendering of the existing dwelling. It should be noted that the application as originally submitted also included a garage/carport to the side of the dwelling, which is specifically referred to in Councillor James's call-in reason, which is printed in the at the beginning of the report. That element has since been removed from the application and isn't part of what we're discussing now. You'll note from the report on page 8 that a recent application made to Historic England by a member of the public for the property to be added to the list of buildings of special architectural or historic interest resulted in Historic England deciding that the criteria for listing were not fulfilled. Therefore, as the building is not designated as a listed building, any internal alterations proposed do not require planning permission. Following the amendments to remove the garage/carport from the application, the extensions are sited at a sufficient distance to avoid breach of the council's design guidelines in respect of amenity. 3 car parking spaces and sufficient manoeuvring space is proposed to be provided to the front of the property. And the application is recommended for approval subject to the conditions listed on pages 15 and 16 of the agenda. So, as I said, that's red edge is the application boundary. See that on the aerial photograph, don't jump ahead. Then we have 8 images to show you, and those are the directions that the images are taken from. First one is the front elevation of the existing dwelling. You can see it's taken from the edge of the road, Yarnfield Lane. The property is situated behind a brick wall and there's elements of hedging to the front. And you can see part of the front elevation, but on part of that you'll see elements of mismatched brickwork, some brickwork in different colours and sizes. Image 2 is a partial, is a photo of part of the rear elevation of the property, and it shows the existing rearmost part, which is just in front of the single storey lean-to element just in front of the picture. This is the rear part of the side elevation which faces towards High Lows Lane. And again, you can see a mixture of size and colour brickwork. Image 4, this is the other side elevation of the property. So this is to the west, and the photograph is taken from the driveway. So the darker coloured brickwork to the right is the wraparound of what you saw on the front elevation. And that's the same part in the corner of that photograph, and this shows the rest of the rear elevation. The part you saw before is to the left of this photograph. Also on this photograph you can see the neighbouring property, which is Ashgate House, to the right of the photograph. Image 6, this time you can see the whole of the front elevation, and you can see the driveway going up towards the side of the property. So image 7 is looking across the front of the property, roughly where the parking is proposed, and again, the property that you can see in the distance is Ashgate House. And then finally, this photograph is taken from the rear garden looking north towards Chestnut House, which is a relatively modern property to the north. So on the plans, I think you might be able to read, but Chestnut House is the property just above the red edge, and Ashgate House is the one just below it. This is a proposed layout. So to the front of the property, you can see the three parking spaces that I mentioned and the manoeuvring space. The existing retained element of the dwelling is a sort of mauve colour, and the extensions, you can see the extensions are effectively blue. And then this image shows the floor plans to the left and the elevations to the right as existing. And the final plan shows the floor plan and elevations as proposed. And it also has two cross sections through the building as well, hence why there's more elevations you can see there. As I say, Chairman, the application's recommended for approval, subject to conditions listed on pages 15 and 16.
Yeah. Thank you. Mrs. Hughes, could you go to the table? You have 3 minutes, and I'll indicate when there's a minute left.
Yes, may I first make my statement, please, sir? Thank you. For the avoidance of doubt, I wish to make you aware that although I'm a parish councillor of Yonfield and Caldmere's parish council, this evening I will be speaking in a personal capacity. I'm not representing Yonfield and Caldmere's parish council, nor am I expressing its opinions on this matter. Thank you.
Thank you.
Although I'm a parish councillor, Gorsby Hill Farmhouse is a heritage asset situated in the historic core of Yonfield and opposite listed buildings. Historic England describes it as of local historic significance and a distinctive example of a former farmhouse with origins that probably date from the 17th century. The plan involves demolition and the building of large extensions not in keeping with its character. Your conservation officer describes the fourth and final version of the heritage statement as brief at best. Instead of informing and guiding the development, it has been produced retrospectively. The original heritage statement was rejected by your officers for not complying with the NPPF, and this final version, which is barely changed, still doesn't. Neither does it comply with the local plan. Policy N9 states, proposals that affect the significance of a heritage asset will not be accepted unless they provide sufficient information for that impact to be assessed. And all potential harm to the significance of a heritage asset, including its setting, will require clear justification. The officer report states that the conservation officer has no objections to the development. Actually, she strongly objects to the proposed 100 millimetre external insulation because it will markedly alter Gorsby Hill's appearance, harm its character, and may even damage its fabric. You need to ask the officers directly why this objection is being ignored. Rendering will cover up its distinctive brickwork, which charts the farmhouse's evolution. Distinctive architectural features, such as arched brick window headers, will be lost. Distinctive brickwork and features on the adjacent listed buildings have all been conserved. Policy N9 stresses the need to conserve and protect the significance of heritage assets. I quote, by avoiding loss of heritage fabric and historic fabric and details of significance. The render also means it would no longer fit in with surrounding buildings, buildings that were built on the original farm site to complement Gorstey Hill. The officer's report states there are other render dwellings in the area to which the dwelling relates. We need to ask them to name these render dwellings as we simply don't know where they are. Gorstey Hill is clearly of local historic significance, illustrating vernacular and agricultural development of the area. This plan will destroy its historic setting and will significantly harm its distinct character. Gorstey Hill would become an insipid, characterless dwelling of an indeterminate age. We are not opposed to development of the site, but we are very opposed to this particular plan, which does not, it is not in sympathy with the building itself.
Thank you very much.
Gentlemen.
I haven't received an application from a supporter to speak. Is there a supporter here? Would you like to go to the table and speak? You have 3 minutes. And could you tell us who you are, please?
I'm the thank you. I'm the proposed owner of the property. I'm currently a tenant. And I'm negotiating the purchase of the property at this very minute.
Thank you.
Hoping to develop it so that I can get around it.
Is it Mr. Wardle?
Yes, Tom Wardle.
Okay, well, you've got 3 minutes to speak.
All I want to say is that the property was a farmstead, and the neighbouring property, where this gentleman lives, Ashgate House, was built in part of the land at the side of it. So too was Chestnut House, which is at the rear of it, where the fruit trees were originally in the farmstead, and the other buildings, the flats that are built nearby, are also built in the rickyard of it, and. It just seems a little bit sad to me that the actual farmstead itself can't be brought up to date in order that I can get around it in my wheelchair and live there comfortably with my family. And really, that's all I want to say. The the cladding on the outside, which is going to be rendered, is. Proposed to be 100mm thick in order that it gives the correct U value so that the house will be warm. It's currently freezing cold. It's already freezing cold now. I'm living in it now. And if I was to put the insulation on the inside, I would probably be reducing all my rooms and making it more difficult to get around, because it's a cottage at the end of the day. I'm going to make it more difficult to get around with a wheelchair. So by putting the insulation on the outside, and I dispute the fact that it's going to make the place look worse, all the various brick colours and brick sizes and whatever, and very poorly built brickwork as well, is going to benefit from being covered up. And this business of covering it up is going to create a problem with the with it breathing and whatever, is just smoke and mirrors. It's not going to cause a problem. It's going to actually improve the place.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, why don't I just ask Mr. Wardle if his condition is permanent?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you,
sir. Can I ask the ward councillor to come to the table? I remind you, you've got, if you would need it, 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. English Heritage, Historic England and National Trust all state that historic farm buildings like Gorstey Hill Farm are historically important and their character should be preserved. They have written hundreds of pages about this, so has Stafford County Council, which spent a lot of money as part of the West Midlands Historic Farmsteads Characterisation Project, which mapped all of the remaining farmsteads across the county. This acknowledges their importance to the rural character of the county. The purpose of the heritage statement is to assess the building's history and historic significance, and to use the information gathered to inform the plans, not the other way round. At no point has the applicant sought any kind of independent assessment by a suitably qualified heritage consultant. What can only be described as a fiasco with the heritage statement tells you everything you need to know about how little priority has been placed on conserving the history of Gorstey Hill Farm. The design, access and heritage statement document is poor quality. Even now, despite us being on the fourth version, it contains errors, lacks detail, contains contradictions and makes spurious claims. For example, claiming that all by rendering the building it will create a complementary and cohesive appearance with buildings which are, according to the same document, barely visible. The buildings referred to aren't even rendered and have extensive areas of unpainted, mismatched brickwork. Claiming that the four buildings near Gorstey Hill that are rendered, of these three have frontages of painted brick, while the other is over 150 metres away and not visible from Gorstey Hill. Stating that red brick is the dominant building material in the village, which is true, but then to propose the use of white rendering to cover up Gorstey Hill's distinctive red bricks, this is contrary to policy November 1. Design must have regard to local content, including heritage assets. Including a picture of a single registered, rendered residential dwelling some 150, 120 metres away, but to ignore the fact that all the residential buildings immediately surrounding Gorstey Hill are not rendered, as they were built from red brick to emulate its appearance. The plans propose that the picturesque front garden will be ripped up and replaced with car parking, despite there being generous space for parking at the side and the rear of the property. Policy N1 states that car parking should be well integrated and discreetly located. Also, its historic perimeter wall will be demolished and replaced with a characterless 1.8 metre high modern fencing, which will have a detrimental effect on the historic street scene while also impacting negatively on the setting of the adjacent listed buildings. Because there is no fully researched and detailed heritage assessment, there remains significant doubt and uncertainty about the significance of the building. Whilst there has not clearly been alterations during its lifetime, which have not been sympathetic to the building, to use these as justification for carrying out further damaging work is illogical and contrary to the local plan. The focus now should be on preserving what is left and make sure mistakes made in previous centuries are not repeated. Policy N9 states the need to conserve and protect the significance of heritage assets by avoiding loss of historic fabric and detail of significance. Yarnfield and Coldmeads Parish Council has submitted a number of responses expressing concerns. No immediate neighbour supports it. Local people have expressed very detailed and reasoned opposition, and I believe that if an approved decision was challenged, the lack of a compliant heritage statement would mean the decision would be overturned.
1 minute left.
Buildings like Gorstey Hill are often unprotected simply due to the fact their rurality means they are rarely in conservation areas. Our role in protecting them, therefore, becomes vitally important. This evening, you have the chance to preserve Gorstey Hill's character and historic integrity for future generations in the historic heart of a rural Staffordshire village. And I therefore recommend that this application is rejected. I can say that there is a case where you need to stand back and look at an application and recognise what can only be described as architectural vandalism against a building which has significant historic interest within the village.
Okay, thank you, Councillor. I open the I open the matter to you.
Do I not need to come back?
Do you want to come back on anything, Spike? No. Councillor Beattie?
Can I just ask, I think the councillor referred to policy N1. Can you just remind me what policy N1 is, John? I don't have that at my fingertips.
N1 is design, I think. I think you refer to N9.
I should know that.
Sorry. Oh, okay. N1 is design, N9 is historic environment.
N9, I've got you. Thank you.
Councillor Trowbridge, you wanted to.
No, that was my name. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have much of an issue with this, but I do have a slight one with the white render. To have part of the building done wouldn't be over drastic, but to have the whole front isn't in keeping with the area. I know there's that they're basing it on, is this historic, is this in an area of historic value, but it's not in keeping with the area is what I'd like to say here. And I can't understand why, I know the gentleman said it would make the room smaller by having it rendered inside instead of out, but it's a very large building with the extensions. I can't see why it couldn't be done indoors, and I'm not 100% sure why we're allowing render to this lovely, it's a beautiful building. It really is, but I know beauty is in the eye of the beholder. But I can't see why we're allowing the render. Could you explain to me how we got to that decision so that I can make more sense of it, please?
Okay. You see reference in the report to certain buildings that are painted brick and rendered. Mm-hmm. What I've done earlier today is I've looked on Google Maps, and some of you may well have done so as well. And there are more than it refers to in the report, and there are more closer, in the sense that just looking at what you've got on the screen, so on the opposite side of High Lows Lane, I think it's called Le Burnham Cottage, the gable part of that is rendered. It's either rendered or painted brick, I can't quite see from here. The other side of Ashgate House is Yarnfield Village Hall, that's definitely rendered. The one across the road, the listed buildings, which is the three cottages referred to in the report, they are painted brick. A little bit further past Le Burnham Cottage, you've got the pub, the Labour in Vain, which is rendered, white red, green, white red. So there are a number in the vicinity of the site, and I wasn't particularly looking, I just looked up and down the street.
Now come back, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, the two build, I agree, the two buildings that are rendered aren't dwellings. The one's a pub, one's a community building.
Yeah.
And yes, I saw like gable ends and things, so that wouldn't bother me. You know, the little bit that they've got on the north doesn't bother me. It's the whole of the front being white. It smacks you in the face. I don't like it, personally. But I know I'm not the planner, but I think that could be done internally.
If you notice in the report, the conservation officer doesn't object to the rendering. Her concern is about the external insulation, which is then rendered, and because that projects forward of the brickwork. But the actual white rendering itself, she's not objecting to.
I'll wait for this.
Councillor Beattie, you wanted to come back?
I just wanted to come back on the point about the external insulation. I mean, to me, that's almost the biggest problem that the conservation officer has taken considerable exception to the external rendering and the impact it will have on the conformity of the windows and so forth. I suppose the question I've got is this such a precedent if you allow this to happen on this particular building for whatever reason, Is it fair to say that anybody could say, oh, well, I haven't got much room for internal insulation on my property, I'd like to put it on the outside? Is it a valid planning consideration at all? Not the fact that they're doing it, but the reason for doing it.
Yeah. No, I understand the reason. Whereas obviously, newer properties will be cavity wall and that kind of thing, which this isn't. It's a difficult one because if somebody quotes it as an example in trying to justify something else, clearly it's an individual. There's an individual circumstance. You're never going to get two circumstances that are exactly the same as each other. So I understand what you're saying, and there could be an element of that, yes. But equally, if that is the way that, if that is the practical way to resolve the thermal efficiency issue, then that would be potentially a material consideration.
That's helpful, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Cooper.
Thank you, Chair. Image number four, if we could touch that one, please.
Sorry, which?
Image number four.
Yeah.
By way of an example, there's a hideous mess on that gable end there of brickwork. Is part of the dilemma that I'm struggling with at the moment. It looks rather like something's hit the building, it was semi-demolished and then built back again, or has been built on top of it. It's just a curious sandwich and looks pretty ugly, for one. Secondly, that's to me is, you know, even if you're rendering that gable end, it might be an improvement. But the other thing that concerns me, and I think the devil might be in the detail, if you're going to put insulation on the outside of that brickwork, is that going to be so thick that you'll have to modify the roof, both at the guttering level and the eaves, to extend over the required thickness of the insulation? In which case, there's more change on this than would meet the eye if we've got to change the roof.
Well, 100 millimetres is 10 centimetres, so it's kind of thickness, isn't it?
So that would be pretty much underneath the guttering, if not.
Mm. Well, looking at that end gable, I can't tell you how far the roof projects beyond the gable end, but it clearly does. If you look at the right-hand end of the photograph, I would have thought it's at least 10 centimetres from the gable. I don't know, I've not measured it, but just looking at the impression I get from that photograph, that might well be then that with external insulation it comes up to the edge of the roof.
Thanks, John. What I'm doing, Chair, if I may, is suggesting it's not so much just aesthetic, but practically. Is it practical solution? Thank you.
Councillor Edgler.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Can I just have some clarification of, is it Chestnut House, the Ashgate House? Have they been built in what was the grounds of the farm?
That's what the applicant said, and certainly looking at the pictures, they're modern properties.
Yeah, and can you just show us again where the car parking's got? We've got a photograph of where the car parking's going to be, is it just what we've got in the drawing?
The front
of the house, isn't
it? Yeah, it's in front where you can see the grassed area there. There'll be a manoeuvring area and the parking will be probably from where the photograph is taken.
Okay, thank you for that. Thank you.
Councillor Hood.
Thank you, Chairman. Could we just go back to image four, please?
Yeah.
I think it was the local member who spoke about the importance of the red brick And I have to echo Councillor Cooper's sentiments. It's a real mishmash, you know, and strangely enough, I don't know whether anyone else can see it, maybe it's my eyes, this photograph, the colour isn't as vibrant as this photograph. That really is red, and I, you know, 10 centimetres of rendering, I think it's my personal opinion, it would enhance the actual brickwork, because there's only just that section on the gable end that truly is the red brickwork. The rest is a mishmash of, I don't know, maybe the used brickwork, it's been patched, that's how it looks, as Councillor Cooper said. But 10 centimetres, I have no objection to that. That's my opinion. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Councillor King.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Has there been a calculation of the increase in floor area as compared to the original? And does it, that 70% rule come in? Is that it?
It's a key service village, aren't we?
Yeah, so the 70% does not apply.
Doesn't apply.
Okay.
Chairman, if I can just go back to the elevations, I think members might find this helpful, judging by the discussion we've just had. There you go. So, yeah, one's brighter than the other. So, looking at the top, then the top photograph is obviously the front elevation, so you can see the render across the whole of the front of the existing. The proposed porch has red brickwork at lower level, and you can see an extension, single story extension, which is further back, but you can see it from the front. And then coming down to the rear elevation, which is the middle elevation there. That one looks a bit brown, and that one looks brown. But basically, the key on here shows it as heritage red brick. So there's brick on the extensions. In fact, the extensions are brick and timber in effect, whereas the rendering is to the retained part of the original dwelling. So it's not the whole of the property that's being rendered. The modern parts will be presumably suitably insulated to meet building regulations in their own right. It's the what's essentially the two side elevate. The two gable ends plus the front elevation.
Councillor Beattie.
Can I ask another question that follows on from the ward member about the parking? He states that there's adequate parking already without digging up the front garden, basically. Mm. And that's my definition of it. It would be would John like to comment on that particular point?
Thank you for asking that.
Yeah, they go back to the. So if I look at that photograph, you can see just below the property itself, you can see the driveway coming off Yarnfield Lane, comes between Gorsty Hill Farm and Ashgate House. And then there's an area to the rear with a turning area as well. So that's where the parking is at the moment.
Do you know how many vehicles that takes?
You can get quite a few vehicles into that space. You can see some on one of the photographs, I think. So for example, that's one that you can see part of there. They're not marked out as spaces.
Yeah.
and that one you can see the same white car plus a dark coloured one as well, just on the left of the photograph. But what I wanted to show you was the on here, the extension at the rear goes over part of that parking area. So the driveway is still there, but the area where most of the parking is taken up, or at least blocked off partly by the rear extension. Hence why I think the applicant is proposing to put the parking at the front.
Sorry, can I come back on that again then? Would that still take the three cars that are suggested?
There's three spaces there, yes.
It looks as if the area at the back would take the three spaces.
Councillor Hood, you indicated.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about a wheelchair access in and out of the car. I would imagine that's why the parking's being changed to where we have it here on the map.
To make that easier.
Yes.
Councillor McCann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think if I have an issue with this application at all, it is that front porch. On page 7, it's described, it sits centrally in a principal elevation and takes modest form and scale of sympathetic design to the main building. Well, I don't think that makes any sense at all. It's not of a modest scale, and it's not sympathetic to the main building at all. So I would have an issue with that porch in terms of its size and design. And it could be a lot more sympathetic and a lot more modest.
Okay, Kat.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Can I just ask one more question? If you go back onto image 6 for me, John. Thank you. I look at this, the middle section is the original, and then it's got an extension to the right, and then whatever that is to the left, whether it's an extension or there's been an accident. Now, to render either end wouldn't bother me. It's just the whole thing going across. It's going to look so sort of stark, isn't it? And especially opposite a listed building. I just find that a bit much. I can't see how we're allowing the whole of that frontage. I get what everyone's saying, there's bits, but not in the middle. The whole middle section looks like the original, and that's the pretty bit. And I have no issue with the parking, I have no issue with the extension. I just think that's just so good. Is it me? Am I seeing this wrong? But I just think that whole building, right along the front and side there, is going to stand out like a sore thumb.
The list of building it referring to is painted brick, white painted brick.
Is it?
Mm.
He's not asking to paint the brick though, he's asking to render. That brick can never come back when you render. It wrecks, it doesn't. It's not like paint you can actually get off, but render, you mark your bricks, you wreck it.
Councillor Hood?
Yeah,
sorry.
I'm just, you know, thinking that, okay, so when it's done immediately, we are going to have a white canvas, then we're going to have, like, the ivy only takes about a year to grow up and various things, you know, very cottage-like, I think it's very short-sighted thinking, it's going to be white forever. It won't be, because it's quite natural, it's in a natural setting.
Are you wanting to make a proposal, Councillor Beattie?
No, I just want to ask one more question. Again, the board member said there are no researched heritage statements by the applicant. Would the applicant normally be expected to produce their own researched heritage statements?
The conservation officer took the view that it was an undesignated heritage asset.
Yeah.
The applicant wouldn't have known that would be her view, when the application was submitted, because it's not listed, it's not in a conservation area. So this results from the case officer going back to the applicant and saying, can you please provide?
And then the conservation officer has been disappointed that they haven't adopted recommendations that were put forward by her.
You can see there's various, several responses from the conservation officer.
That bothers me. I have to say that does bother me. I sort of understand that they could have used prior approval anyway, or
could have used
prior approval or not needed consent anyway. I didn't quite understand that.
Sorry, I didn't understand the question.
What's the point you're making, Councillor?
My main point is that the applicant has not complied with requests made by the conservation officer, and various requests made by the conservation officer. My question is, are those requests something that we would have expected the applicant to conform with?
What you've got to take into account is the fact that the conservation officer is one consultee, and as you recall from the planning training, you have to consider the planning balance.
Sure.
Of which a consultee is one. So just because the conservation officer objects, does not mean you automatically refuse an application. Mm. And as I said before, it's not listed and it's not in a conservation area. Mm. And whether or not it's an undesignated heritage asset is the view of the conservation officer. We haven't got a list.
But that is an important factor in this, is that point about its heritage status.
Exactly. That's the point I
make.
Okay.
One more, Jen, sorry. Am I correct in believing that the dormer windows, as shown there, are reduced in size on the application? Because I'm looking at the plan here, and the dormer windows shown on the plan seem narrower than... Is that a word? Narrower.
Narrow.
More narrow than the window shown there.
Narrow is all right.
Narrow is okay, yeah. This has been recorded,
but it was all right.
I would agree with Councillor McEwen. They certainly look narrower than on the photograph. You'll see from the report that it refers to them being re-spaced. So you've still got four dormer windows, but instead of having three centrally and one to the left, they're sort of almost not quite equally apart, but spaced out across. But I do agree with you that certainly comparing the dormers with the windows below them on the plan, they look narrower than on the photograph.
I think we've discussed this application for a long time. I think that the recommendation of the officer is that we approve the application subject to conditions. Can I ask for an indication of those who would agree with that recommendation, please?
That is a proposal from the chair, which is perfectly correct, but we do need a seconder before we take the vote.
You'll second that, so it is seconded.
Fine, sorry to be stupid.
No, I think you're right. I'm sorry, I should have said that. So it is a proposal from the chair that has been seconded by Councillor Nixon
to permit as per officer recommendation.
Chairman, could we add the recommendation that the dormer windows are widened to the size they are now, following Councillor McEwen's recommended observations?
Yeah. No,
you can't amend their plan for them. The only way you could do that would be by inserting an additional condition requiring further details of you don't want windows or something like that.
I propose that we request those further information.
So the proposal is from the chair, seconded by Councillor Nixon, but amended to include.
You need a second.
Yeah, sorry, that's a.
What did the.
Yeah, sorry. We've got the first proposal that's been seconded, so if there's another proposal, that needs to be seconded, and you can't. I can see that, unless you agree the amendment, and that's also agreed by the seconder. But I think we need to be clear on what the amendment is there.
The amendment would be that the dormer windows be widened.
I think that's not going to work. That's not reasonable. I wouldn't advise that. I mean, you've heard what John says. You're tinkering with the design there. You've got to approve or refuse the designs before you.
Can I just
clarify?
Just very quickly. I realise the width of those windows has caught the eye, but if you look at the difference between the two front elevations, the front elevation has changed. The position, we've got three close windows and one further apart. On the new scheme, there are four windows, all spaced further apart. So the windows have changed.
Yeah.
And the location has changed.
Okay. There is a proposal that has been seconded. There's a proposal that has been seconded.
You need to take the vote on that, Chairman.
Those in favour of accepting the proposal made by the officers, please indicate.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 4, Mr. Chairman.
Those against?
2 against, Mr. Chairman.
Any abstentions? The proposal is approved.
Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. We gave that a good hearing. Okay, we now go on to application 21/350/26/FUL.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, I'm a bit of a mess earlier and I will be speaking on this and I won't be taking part in the debate or voting.
Right, and Councillor Pardesi?
I'm the same thing.
So neither of you will be participating or voting on this particular item.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we do have a. No, you can't introduce. No, you introduce.
Good evening. This application is called and permitted due to concerns over massing and over intensification. I'd also report, since the report was drafted, a further 4 left to be received, but they don't raise any new material foundation conditions, not already in the officer's report.
Excuse me, Chairman,
could you speak up? Sorry.
If she could speak for us, deafer people.
I'll start coughing now. The application proposes the development of 2 new dwellings within the Kirklage of number 26 Avon Rise, which is a roughly rectangular site bounded by Avon Rise Highway to the west and north. Avon Rise slopes upward from southwest to northeast, but the site is partly level, so the house, together with its front garden and part of its rear garden, part directly behind the house, are fairly level. The garden step down to the south and the west. The house has an attached garage to the east and there's an electricity substation between the garage and the neighbour's bungalow, which you will notice on the future plans is labelled as number 24, which is actually number 28. The proposals involve the demolition of the garage to make way for 2-storey detached dwellings and levelling part of the side garden to accommodate a 2-bed bungalow. All the dwellings would gain their access from Avon Rise. The development's in a sustainable location, which is in the second boundary of Stafford. and it's bounded by residential developments on all sides. You'll note to the, well, just off the southwest corner, there's the Kingston Hill area, which is allotment gardens. But otherwise, it's all surrounded by residential property, comprising both two and single storey properties. And as set out in the report, it's within 15 kilometres of the Cannock Chase Special Area of Conservation, so it would require a contribution, but this is progressing via a unilateral undertaking. There's no highways concerns, that, well, sorry, there's no highway objection to it. The County Council have been consulted and they haven't objected to it. And there's sufficient parking, two spaces for each of the units. So it's effectively a small windfall site in an established residential area, it's a sustainable location. It complies with local park policies and NPPF, and so the application recommends its approval, subject to completion of the unilateral undertaking and to conditions as listed in page 36 of the report. We go to the photo of the slide now. First slide, well, we've talked about that one already. You can see it's surrounded by residential, existing residential properties and green areas in southwest being the allotments. Area photographs, again, you can see the green area. There's some trees around the periphery of that, but it is allotment gardens in the most part. This is the photo plan, obviously the arrow showing where the photos are taken from. The first photograph is looking at the electricity substation. We could see how the development steps up the hill from the right of the photograph up to the left. On the right is the host property, number 26. The blue-doored garage and the blue front door, they would be demolished to make way for one of the new properties. Next to that, with the white roof, is the electricity substation. And then beyond that, a little further up the hill, you've got the first of the bungalows, number 28. The second photograph, this is looking across the front elevation of number 26. And it's looking, you can again see the slope down, and Avon Rise then bends around to the left, and you can see some of the two-storey properties on the other side of the road at the right of the picture. And in the centre of the picture, the side garden area bound by the beech hedge would be the garden of the proposed new bungalow. The third photograph is looking from the, it's looking along the front of the, sorry, along the side of number 26 from the front of the site, which is the north, looking towards the south and towards the gable end of number 22. And the new bungalow would be within that area with the ground cut away so that it's roughly level with the highway, and there'd be a retaining structure between that and the existing number 26. This is looking along the rear facade towards number 28. You can see roughly centre of the photograph the roof of the bungalow, number 28, and the new two-storey property would be between the host dwelling and that bungalow, and it wouldn't project materially further than that. It would be roughly the same line or same alignment as that. And this photograph is looking from the towards the rear of the host property, again looking northwards along the side boundary. Again, you can see the where the garden steps slopes away from the plateau that the house is on. And that would be, as I said previously, levelled down and retaining structure so that the bungalow would sit closer to highway level to give level access to the property. The sixth one again is looking back, it's again from the north part of the garden, looking back again towards the gable end of the property number 22, and again where the proposed bungalow would be. And the number seven is looking up the rise, the host property in the centre, and you can see there's a gable of bungalows to the left of that as you move up the hill, and the beech hedge around the corner would be around the garden of the proposed new bungalow. And the final photograph is looking at the front of number 22, and the hedge there to the left of their drive, that's where the driveway would be for the proposed new bungalow and the two car parking spaces on the front. Moving on to the plans. The first one is the location general layout of the site as existing. We can see the where the two blue cars are. That is the existing access point to the garage, and then obviously that square where the garage is the area that will be demolished. The second plan is the existing property, the Hurst property number 26. And the third one is the proposed site layout, where you can see the blue shaded would be the two-storey property with its two car parking spaces, roughly where the existing property number space is. That's a two-storey, two-bed house. And then the new access created for Avon Rise, the two car parking spaces and a manoeuvring area in the frontage. And then the sort of purple shaded property is the proposed new bungalow, again two bedrooms with two car parking spaces and access around the corner again from Avon Rise. Fourth image, we have, sorry, fourth plan, we have the floor plans and elevations of the proposed two dwellings, two new dwellings. And those would be the proposed floor plans of the amended number 26 with the garage removed. And finally, the existing and proposed street scenes. And the street scenes, initially, the top one is the existing from the north. Below that is the proposed from the north, and you can see where the blue shade is now, the new proposed new two-storey property. That has been reduced in height, where initially they were proposing it to be actually taller than number 26. They've now reduced it so that it aligns far better with what's around it and gives a more natural progression up the hill. And then the bottom one of those is the elevation from the west, showing the proposed new bungalow. As said before, it's a windfall site. It's providing some housing within an established residential area in the second boundary of Stafford. It complies with policy, and recommendation is therefore to approve. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We have an objector, Mr. Alex Harris, who'd come to the table. You can make yourself comfortable, and then you have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Good evening all. Thank you for allowing me to speak on behalf of our local residents regarding our concerns about this planning application. This application should be refused as there is insufficient information to determine the application and it fails to meet the plans and the policies contained within the MPPF and Stafford Borough Council local plan. Requisite visibility displays have not been provided. Considering the gradings of the road and the sharp right-hand bend that is intrinsic to the development site, the lack of visibility is a serious highway safety concern. To achieve the visibility displays would result in a total loss of the existing hedgerow. Would this be acceptable to the planning officers and the committee members present this evening? Pedestrian and vehicular intervisibility has not been provided from the accesses, and considering this is a well-used through route for school children walking to Western Road High School and other local primary schools, this would constitute a serious highway safety concern. This application should be refused as it fails to demonstrate a safe and suitable access, which is one of the key policies contained within the MPPF, paragraph 111. Only the minimum number of car parking spaces are proposed. Visitors, delivery or service vehicles will have no choice but to park and obstruct the highway. Neighbouring dwellings will not be able to use their driveways safely, and this will further exacerbate the lack of visibility around the bend. The scale and massing of this application is totally disproportionate to the site curtilage. It will leave the existing and proposed dwellings with insufficient amenity spaces, and the dwellings will overlook existing properties. There are numerous discrepancies within the submitted documents provided by the applicant. The submitted drawings are inaccurate and provide very few, if any, dimensions. These inconsistencies extend to the Great Crested Newt report, where the submitted report is not even related to this application site, and the Arbor Cultural Statement, where some of the trees are not correctly mapped. 3 minutes is not enough time to fully expand on the inconsistencies and flaws of this application, but I would sincerely hope that my comments would help to briefly highlight the concerns of my neighbours and the residents proximate to this application. It is a flagrant violation of the policies contained in the MPPF and Stafford Borough Council local plan. It is also an obvious example of garden grabbing and demonstrates the greed of the executors of this estate. I would implore the councillors and the members of this committee to seriously reconsider this application, as it should be refused for the following reasons. The application is not appropriate for this area. It is contrary to the policies of the NPPF. It is not in keeping with the policies of Stafford Borough Council's local plan. It fails to provide a safe and suitable access, and it is a classic example of garden grabbing and greed. The executors of this estate are taking advantage of government policies where providing housing and development top trumps the values and laws that protect Stafford residents. Basically, also, we have had other comments from the architects that are derogatory towards the local residents. They're creating a smoke screen. We're seriously concerned for the amenity spaces and everything else. And also, the development is not going to offer a great place for those people to live. If you look at the garden sizes there, it's detrimental. Also, the electric substation, far too close. And whilst they say that there's no objection, there is far too close to that house, and it does say that it would cause potential disturbance and inconvenience to
the residents in the area. Your time is up.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I don't think we have a supporter of this application in the room, do we?
No.
Okay, could the ward councillor come to the table then, please, Councillor Nixon? Or one of the ward councillors, I should say. Are you ready?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Councillor Podesta and I have been lobbied by the residents about this proposal. It is, well, as the gentleman just said, Mr. Harris, it is cramming a lot into a small space, and it doesn't lend itself to the appearance of all the other houses in the area. If we go to page 29 of the agenda, the principle of the proposed development. The site forms part of an established residential curtilage of 26 Avon Drive. The definition of previously developed land in the NPPF excludes private residential gardens in urban areas. It excludes them, and therefore it's described as greenfield. Although it does not exclude the development, it doesn't encourage it either. And if we could just go to Plan 6, please. Looking at either the existing, if this is what it says it looks like, the existing or the proposed, you'll see that it appears to be on a level piece of roadway there. It slopes down, then it's level, then it slopes down again. But if we go back to image one, the ground slopes very steeply there. The ground level for that garage is just over a metre lower than the ground the substation's on. And you can see that by the size of that wheelie bin, because it doesn't actually reach the base of the substation. And looking at the gap between the two, it'll say that it shows that the substation is less than 1.5 metres from the garage. Now, as it's a garage, it doesn't matter. But when it becomes a residential property within 24 hours a day, then it does matter, because we have then, on page 32, where Western Powers highlighted the potential nuisance to occupants due to the electric substation. Although they haven't they've not actually objected to the proposal, an informative recommendation is drawn to the developers. And if we go on to page 34, Western Power Distribution says there may be asked that National Grid assets in the vicinity. But National Grid would advise that no dwellings are erected with a minimum distance of 5 metres to a substation, and if possible 9 metres from the boundary. Now that is National Grid's recommendation of a minimum of 5 metres, and we're talking of less than 1.5 metres in this case. And over the page 35, it repeats again, the National Grid would advise against destruction of any grid dwelling within 5 metres. And it goes on that although it doesn't own the land, so it's got no enforcement order on the land, I don't think we should ignore the advice of National Grid. And it's not just National Grid, because if you these various documents, I went on the HSE website and got directed to these. And there's one here, how far should you live from a substation? This is for the electromagnetic radiation. And it says the detectable magnetic field generally generated by substations is between 3 and 8 metres. And a lot are stronger. And the safe distance from a substation to live can extend as far as 15 metres. And we're still talking about 1.5 metres.
Can you bring your presentation to a close if you've had your 5 minutes, Tony?
Yeah, very well. And on another document, the UK government, like many others, have set guidelines on the national level of exposure to EMF. And I've complied with these guidelines. The government sets a level of exposure that's listed below. And I won't go into it because my conclusion is I would ask this committee to consider seriously the distance from that substation to the proposed dwelling, the massing on the land itself, and the lack of amenity. And also, I do believe, if they're so minded, that we have some site visits coming up in the very near future. And if you're in any doubt, we could add that one onto the list at the time. Thank you, members.
Thank you very much, Tony. Thank you. Councillor Trowbridge.
Oh, thank you, Chairman. This application, sort of, in my eyes, I see it as two different ones. The bungalow, we are desperate for bungalows in Stafford. But 24A, as it's been called, that tiny little house that they're showing next to the substation, I feel is so wrong. I cannot imagine that garden is within space about dwellings garden. I'm amazed. It just looks absolutely tiny on the picture. And I think, as we've just heard about the substation, I'd like more information on that, because why are we building houses, but allowing houses to be built, should I say, that could be dangerous to the occupants? If it's been said it should be 5 metres away from it. Have you got information on either of that?
Well, all we have is we went back to National Grid and we asked them, do they actually object to it? And they said they don't actually object to it. Oh. And it would be up to the developer to determine whether they want to build something that close. And the developer would have to consult with National Grid, with the electricity people, and sort it out at that stage.
So basically there's
nothing in terms of legislation that can handle the refusal.
That's interesting to hear. And 24A's back garden, is it
24A's
within
space back garden? Yeah. The actual space that's shown on here is 112 square metres. is it 45 square metres they have to have for two beds? 65 for three and more. But certainly, I mean, in any event, it shows 112 square metres. I am aware that the occupant of number 28 has raised the dispute over the boundaries because of the double boundary, and they are attempting to take some land which is probably theirs. Unfortunately, we can't refuse, and you're probably aware, we can't refuse on that basis. They cede their land, so that would be a civil matter between them, those people. But even if we took away... Fast forward to that one.
See, but even when you look at the frontage, the cars just squeeze on there. Everything seems squeezed on 24A, whereas 26A, I have no objection. Yes. And I do know how it goes up and down here, because I used to live around the corner from here.
Even if we take it that the boundary runs from the sort of the left-hand face of the electric substation, so that everything behind that belongs to number 28,
yeah,
they would still have 65 square metres.
Okay, Councillor Trowbridge.
Yes, thank you.
Councillor Edgler.
Thank you very much, Chairman. I've just got one word to say about this, and I think it's awful. I mean, the highway's no problem. I've used that road a few times, and that bend is quite dangerous. Mm. And to think that we're going to put some houses and that on there, I think is absolutely awful. I think it's totally out of keeping the house, the best way. It's totally out of keeping with the area. It's surrounded by bungalows. It looks absolutely awful. And I've got to say, I would recommend that we refuse it.
Councillor Hood.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, I'm totally in tune with Councillor Edgler. It's not very often a planning application amuses me, but I just had visions of all these great crested newts running about, who had to avoid them, which is almost like a Disney film. Western Power Distribution on page 34, where it says there may be national grid assets in the vicinity of the development work, specifics cannot be given as no plan has been provided. It strongly advised that the developer contacts National Grid. So even though they're saying, we hear that from our legal advisor, that they're saying that there is no objection, yet, you know, here in that paragraph, there most certainly is a concern there. And then National Grid would advise that no dwellings are erected within a minimum distance of 5 metres from a substation. I'm sorry, but I think the reasons given, even though they're saying no objection, are extremely concerning, and I most certainly will not support this application. No. Thank you, Chairman.
Councillor McKeown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This image that's on there now, the bungalow to the left and the car parking, I cannot believe that highways don't have a problem with that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just beggars belief, because if you go on, you've got to reverse off. And you've got that bend coming around there. I mean, for goodness sake, what do you need to do to actually have a dangerous situation that highways don't think is dangerous? Because that is terrible.
Councillor Cooper?
I understand totally what people are saying about the hazards of that bend. And the view and everything else, but if you actually use Google Street Maps as well as some of the images, for instance image number 8, you can see part of the problem is you've got an overgrown hedge there which is coming onto the pavement by what looks like is over the head there, you see there, is actually over the pavement by probably about half a metre. And then when you see, you know, the state of the land inside, it's clearly totally neglected. So if people are complaining about the state of that land and the visibility, I would suggest somebody asks the resident to put the hedge back.
I've listened to your comments, but I haven't heard a material reason for refusal.
Have to keep with the area, it's over message.
Councillor Beattie.
Chairman, I would like to use the fact that the substation is too close based on the National Grid advice against construction of a dwelling within 5 metres of a substation.
That's a bit of difficult when they don't object.
However, you are talking about the massing in the context of the substation, aren't you? Which would be.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was going to come on to the next
it's
thing.
Not,
is that
not,
it's
not, the not what the National Grid say in their non objection, but you're talking about cramped.
In that context. Thank you. That's what I'm saying. But then, in addition, that I would object on the grounds of scale and massing anyway. Mm-hmm. And. And also garden grabbing. I'm not sure we're allowed to, that garden grabbing is an issue anymore.
Can you go through that preamble? What your reason again, Councillor Beattie?
Scale and massing.
Yeah.
And the proximity of the substation in the context of the massing of the new development
and street scene as well. That's
happening in
the street.
Councillor Jones, you indicated, I think.
Yeah. I'm still considering what the objector, Mr. Harris, said. I mean, he said, if we accept what was said, our officers are flagrantly not are ignoring things. I can't believe that. So, you know, if you remember what Mr. Harris said, I can't remember the details, but it was everything you're doing was wrong, and what you've come up with was the wrong. And so I wonder if John can comment on it, if you can remember what Mr. Harris said. The fact that everything that's in here is wrong. It's wrong. We missed something, or I can accept that an objector will say anything. But I mean, it's a public meeting, and an objector has ridiculed what our officers have done, which I can't believe. But I mean, I'm just.
I can't recall all of.
Where do you start?
I can't recall all of what he said, but.
I recall there was suggestions that the plans were wrong.
Oh, possibly. Well, we've accepted them, haven't we? And they've been validated.
We have to accept the plans.
Yeah, I mean, they've been validated.
We can't redesign
them.
No.
Okay, Councillor Beattie, you put forward a proposal based on massing, etc. Have we had a seconder to that?
Second that with
okay,
relish. However, I would like to put parking and highway safety issues in there as well. I know highways are infallible, but you know it's quite obvious those parking and entry and exit off the parking space is dangerous and potentially very dangerous.
I mean, can I just come in there, Chairman, that the classic highway situation, it may be obvious to you, Councillor McEwen, but it doesn't appear to be obvious to the appointed experts in the matter, the Highways Agency, and so to include a highways ground in your decision would be risky in terms of appeal.
And we have material reasons
if you've got a sound reason, I don't think you'd want to taint your decision with a bad reason as well.
So we have a proposal that has been seconded. Okay, can I, before I put the proposal, do you want to come back and run into the discussion there? Okay. So there is a proposal that this application be refused on the reasons outlined by Councillor Beattie. And that has been seconded. Can you indicate if you agree with that, that this proposal should be rejected?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, Mr. Chairman.
Those who support it? None. Okay. So that proposal is rejected. Thank you very much.
Okay, we now go on to application 22/35957/FUL, which is relating to a Highfield Social Club in Barnes Road, Stafford. And the recommendation on this is that it is the application is approved subject to conditions and to the applicant entering into a 106 agreement. You take this, John?
Yep. Thanks, Chairman. This application is for the demolition of the existing social club building and redevelopment of the site, comprising the erection of a 10-unit, three-storey block of flats, 7 two-storey dwellings and 1 detached bungalow. The site would comprise entirely of affordable housing. This application follows two previous applications for redevelopment of the site, the first of which was withdrawn and the second for 20 affordable houses and flats was refused in March of this year. The reasons for refusal are listed in your report, but in summary, they related to the inadequate separation distance and amenity between the flats and the rear of some of the houses. So it was an issue within the site itself. This has been resolved by deleting 2 of the second story flats from the development. The conservation officer acknowledges that the proposed scheme includes a block with less height than proposed under the previous application. So the refused application was 0.5 metre higher than this. And the earlier concerns regarding visibility from the conservation area are adequately resolved. The reduction of the height of the flats adjacent to units 5 to 8 from 3 to 2 storeys since the earlier application results in its height and its resultant dominance over gardens is reduced, and the design advisor states that the three-dimensional massing and composition of the building has been improved to a point where it is far more sensitive and visually engaging within its wider setting. There is a small deficiency of parking for the flats, but Highway Authority do not object. The application is recommended for approval subject to the completion of a Section 106 agreement and to the conditions listed on pages 60, 61, 62 and 63 of the agenda. So looking at the plan on the screen, the red edge is the application site boundary, the black edge with the triangles in it just to the right of that is the boundary of the Burton Manor Conservation Area. This is the aerial photograph of the site, so you can see more clearly that the social club building was in the middle of the site and the area to the north of that is the car park. Four photographs on this one, all taken from outside the site. This first one is looking across the junction, across Barnes Road to the social club. This is actually the side of the building, and behind the fence and
shrubs, there's various bits of plant and equipment on there. Image two is effectively the front elevation, which faces out onto the car park. Image three is looking towards the northern boundary, in other words, the opposite side from the same car park. Behind that palisade fence there are allotments. And the fourth photograph is looking along the frontage of the site along Barnes Road. And I think the report refers to a mix of properties in the area. So those just out of sight to the left of the photograph are two-storey semi-detached houses, and the ones you can see more clearly in the middle distance are three-storey flats. This is the layout proposed. So the seven two-storey dwellings are along the frontage of the site, two pairs are semi-detached and a block of three, and the bungalow is the left-hand end of the site. The part three, part two-storey flats is in a kind of inverted L shape towards the rear of the site, and the element that is two-storey is the bit nearest to the back of the houses. This is floor plan and elevation of the two-storey, three-bedroom houses. That is a very similar picture, except that this has with small windows on the end elevations on this particular house type. Plan four is the bungalow, three-bedroomed bungalow. And then image five is the elevations of the flats at the top and the floor plan at the bottom. So in each of the floor plans, the area towards the front, towards the back of the houses, is the left-hand side of that elevation. So you can see on the second floor, it's a roof at that point, and then the third story element is at the rear. As I say, Chairman, the application is recommended for approval subject to the conditions listed and to completion of the Section 106 agreement.
Thank you. We have an objector, Mr. Steve Aidan Jones. Would you like to come to the table? You've got 3 minutes when you're ready.
Thank you. I live with my family in Manor Green, which is in the Burton Manor Conservation Area, and borders the proposed development to the south or southeast. Though I'm speaking against the proposal, I'm not actually against the development of the site per se. In fact, it seems to make sense given the dilapidated state of the current site. Our concern is more around the actual massing and over-intensification of the site, and particularly the size of the proposed apartment block. We understand that this particular building will be a height of approximately 9 metres tall and set closely to the rising brook, the actual brook itself, which separates the development site from our property and from the conservation area. Given that the boundary fence is 2 metres in height, this building will dominate the views from Manor Green and Hanbridge Close. The properties of the building on floors 2 and 3 of the apartment block will overlook those gardens and properties. And as I say, if the property closest to the borderline of the conservation area was of a single or even a two-storey building, we wouldn't have had such an issue. We're in the conservation area, and when an application is submitted from within the conservation area, there is very close scrutiny to the smallest of detail. And yet this development, which would be clearly visible from the conservation area and would have a dominating effect, I'm quite surprised that the conservation officer doesn't have much more of a concern. Within the Burton Manor Conservation Area Character Appraisal document produced by Stafford Borough Council, it specifically highlights that the view looking down the Manor Green is of specific importance. This new development will significantly impact on that view, and therefore it would seem to have a huge detrimental impact on the character of the conservation area. The conservation officer indicates that the dense tree coverage between the conservation area and the proposed site of development will screen the impact of the development. However, in areas, this coverage isn't actually particularly dense, and many of the trees are either dead or dying and need to be removed or cut back. In winter months, the trees obviously become more sparse and the coverage provided becomes a lot more limited. So I would argue that this mitigation shouldn't really become a material factor in this decision.
You've got 1 minute.
Thank you. I'm also a little bit confused by the conservation officer's comments where it stated that they welcome the reduction in height from a previous application shown in elevation D of the plans, but elevation D actually shows the view from the northeast, which is the opposite end from the conservation area. Elevation C, which is where you would see it from the conservation area, is still 3 stories in height. As I'm running out of time, there were other concerns from neighbours around loss of habitat in the sort of the tree belt and the bush belt between the development and the conservation area. And there were also concerns from a number of my neighbours in that the gardens down the down Manor Green become waterlogged and flooded, and we're quite concerned that the intensification on that site will actually potentially have an impact on that sort of flooding and waterlogging situation.
Thank you very much. We have a supporter, Miss Charlotte Stainton.
Thank you. Shall I begin?
Yes, you start. Thank you. You've got 3 minutes.
As you know, this is the site of the former Highfield Social Club. The club is vacant, and despite the best efforts of the owner to secure it, it is currently unattractive and detracts from the area. The site is in a sustainable settlement location where your policies support new housing development. This is exactly the sort of brownfield site redevelopment that your policies actively encourage. This scheme would deliver 18 affordable homes of a variety of sizes and types, including a much needed accessible bungalow. The scheme would be constructed to a high standard by a family-run building firm based in Derby and delivered by a housing association based in Stoke-on-Trent. These companies have a strong track record of delivering quality homes. Your council housing manager has strongly supported the proposals and confirmed that the scheme would deliver much needed 1- and 3-bedroom affordable homes. It's worth noting that the previous review scheme was for 20 dwellings and we reduced this by 2. 18 dwellings are required to make the scheme viable, particularly given it will be for affordable housing, 100% affordable housing. My clients have been working with your planning officer on a scheme for this site for 3 years now. The officer report thoroughly assesses all the material issues and concludes that planning permission should be granted. I can completely understand the points made by the objectors, including about the density of the development. However, the layout, scale and design of the scheme have been very carefully considered. Your planning officer has confirmed in the report that the scheme meets all the required distances between properties, and they have confirmed that the council design advisor and conservation officer have no objection. This is a sustainable location where we are required to make efficient use of land. The comments from local residents about potential impacts must be considered in the context of the fact that the most recent use of the site was a social club.
You've got 1 minute.
All policy requirements have been met by this scheme as confirmed in your officer report. There are no objections from any of your statutory technical consultees, and throughout the application we have provided all the information that's been requested. The applicants have agreed to a Section 106 agreement to control the delivery of affordable housing and requiring the financial contributions that have been requested. Your planning officer has concluded that the provision of 18 affordable dwellings in the sustainable location within Stafford is acceptable in principle. I suggest that it is not just acceptable, but it is strongly encouraged by your planning policies. There is a policy presumption in favour of this type of development, and we ask you please to support the application. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Loughran, do you want to come to the table?
Thank you, Chairman. I haven't particularly come tonight because I am opposed to the demolition of the Highfield Social Club, because I'm wholly supportive of the provision of social housing within the area. I still feel, however, that there is a lot that could be done with this particular site. I do feel that there is over-intensification of the site, and I feel that, in fact, the three-storey block of flats is my main concern. That's one of my main concerns. And I know that it's an improvement on the first application that was sent in. They have reduced the number of units actually on the site, and they have brought it down quite considerably. My concern is that, as I say, there is over-intensification of the site, and I'm not very happy also about the provision of the balconies on the blocks of flats. I wonder if I could see exactly where the balconies are going to be, because whilst I think I can understand that the balconies, the full balconies, are going to look to the allotments, my concern is about the Juliet balconies. I don't know if any of the other members who are here tonight have had any issues raised with Juliet balconies and properties. I have in my ward, because very often when the properties have a Juliet balcony, in the very hot weather, the doors get open and loud music comes out of those apartments, and it creates a tremendous nuisance to neighbours. And I do feel that there isn't a necessity for these Juliet balconies to be there. To me, it seems to be a new fad. They're sticking balconies with these Juliet balconies. They do nothing. I mean, I don't even think they're always attractive. And as I say, I feel that what they tend to do, I have found that in my ward, people do complain that the Juliet balconies, they can't go out onto them, but because it's a full door, they open the door and the music comes out through there. That's one of my concerns. So I can't exactly see where your Juliet balconies are going, John, because it's not very clear on the actual plans itself. I'm going to leave that with you because I'm restricted in how much time I have. One of my other concerns is, in actual fact, the bins. And you refer to the bins on page... there's going to be a hit and miss timber fencing around them. But what I want to know is, what is meant by a hit and miss timber fencing? Is it going to be the bin lorries going to hit it or miss it? I just don't know. I also want to know, what kind of bins are you putting in there? Are the bins only for the flats? Are the bins for everyone who is going to be on this new site? And if so, what kind of bins are they going to be? Are they going to be the kind of bins that I have in my house, where my house is a semi-detached house, and I've got the three bins? Are the bins in that bin area going to be in an area where they're not going to cause a nuisance to the residents on the site? Is it going to be a whole load of bins for the people there, or is it going to be sort of bigger bins that have got a big lid where you bring the rubbish down from your apartment and put it in? Are the bins going to be only for apartments? Are they going to be for all the residents on the site?
You've got
because
1 minute left.
I also have bin issues in my ward, where when you have apartments, the bins are either left out to annoy other residents, or, you know, they're just not used properly. My final concern is actually flooding in the area. And flooding is, first of all, it's mentioned in page 40 and page 41. It's also mentioned on page 50, 54 and 55. And my concern about the flooding is, The comments from the Environment Agency, and the comments are dated, this is page 55, they're dated the 6th of October 22, and they are objecting. They're objecting. Now, in the previous application for this site, we were told that the foul water from the properties was going into existing drains. We're not told that in this application, but we're not told anything different in this application. And my concern is that you're going to have the foul water from 18 properties going into existing drains. Now, if it's the existing drains that are used by the properties in Burton Manor side, those properties were built in the 1920s. So your drains are there from the 1920s, and you're going to be adding into those drains the foul water from 18 other properties.
Your time is up, Councillor.
Okay, as I say, I'm not averse to it, but I really feel that the committee ought to consider these issues that I have raised, Chairman. Thank you very much.
Councillor Pardesi.
Chair, just for clarification, my understanding is this plan, this application is for affordable housing, not social housing.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
It's specifically mentioned as affordable housing in the application.
Thank you.
Chairman, just to pick up a few of the things that Councillor Loughran asked about. Having zoomed into the plan, you can see the bin store is at the end of the long row of parking at the back of the site, near where it says fire tender.
Can you show us exactly where it is, John? Is that a row of houses at the side? It's car parking spaces. And where are the houses that are nearest to this bin? And that's going to be bins for the whole of that complex.
That would be bins for the apartments. I believe these are the bin stores.
All of the apartments are going to come to that bin store.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
One other thing that you asked about was what is hit and miss fencing.
Yeah.
It is where you have vertical fencing, that you have one piece, then a gap, and another piece. So it's a regular fence. But with
litter trap
gaps all the way along.
Councillor Cooper.
Yeah, just a couple of issues. Concern over flooding. I think this development, I get the impression, is going to mitigate flooding issues potentially, because at the moment the Highfields Club is just a solid lump of concrete and is surrounded by car parking. This appears to have green grass areas, unless the green colour signifies something else. So you arguably got better natural drainage on the side than solid ground. One issue. The other, that's a positive. On the negative side, the fact that one of the properties, a flat I believe, hasn't got its own parking would concern me. Because any development, there's never enough parking. And to actually acknowledge there's one less here, is going to cause issues. You'll have that roadway there blocked, you'll have the road outside of the development with parking alongside it, almost certainly.
No.
But that's not material, John.
In terms of the houses and the bungalows, they require two spaces for property. For flats, it's one space per flat plus one visitor space for every four. So in other words, 1.25 spaces. Mm-hmm. So there are enough for one space for each flat. It's in effect the additional 0.25 that is not there. So you're not going to have a flat with no parking, but there is the extra space or so that would be for visitors
visitors is not there.
So through you, Chair, that will inevitably potentially lead to conflict when visitors, because everybody has visitors, parks in one of the residents' parking slots or out on the road. Whether that's a material consideration or not, I don't know.